The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in as students to the game. My name is Alex Bauman, and I'm joined by my co-hosts today, Gray Oldenburg and Ethan Gladwell. We had a wild week of week 10 of college football. But before we get into that, like we usually do, there's a big story we need to cover this week, especially for Nathan's sanity. His prayers were finally answered after, 7 weeks of losing, Nathan? The New Orleans Saints had fired head coach Dennis Allen after losing his seventh straight game, which was funny enough to the 1-7 Carolina Panthers. Special teams coordinator Darren Rizzi has been named interim head coach. Nathan, what are your thoughts on Mickey Loomis and the Saints finally biting the bullet and firing Dennis Allen?
Well, it's one problem solved. I will say that it really gets back to last year when we did absolutely nothing and I wanted him to be fired in the offseason, but we remained with him. Mickey Loomis is the most stubborn person in the entire league. I want him gone as well. He's another part of the puzzle, and another part would probably be Derek Carr, who keeps getting my wide receiver one killed. But that's a whole different story. As far as Dennis Allen goes, I don't understand why we thought the experiment would work out with him. The league is very offensive based, and when you hire a defensive head coach to come in and try to run a team, it doesn't really work out well. His previous stint with the Raiders, I mean, he was already with Derek Carr. That didn't work out. And then we put him in pretty much the exact same situation, thinking that, oh, things are going to change. Which just goes back to the stupidity of Mickey Loomis and him not being able to run the franchise. But I am very grateful for the Carolina Panthers. I knew that they would win just because that's just what happens. I'm thankful for Bryce Young. I'm glad he finally was able to get a win under his belt and get some confidence. And I'm glad my Saints can be the provider for that. But man, we were such a joke of a team. I don't understand how we can start 2-0 and then lose 7 straight games. That just shows you how awful a head coach Dennis Allen was. I don't even know where you go from here. You got 1,000 different problems. But I am very thankful we at least were able to solve one of them today.
Yeah. Allen finished with the third worst winning percentage of all time for an NFL head coach, including both his stints with the Raiders and the Saints. He had a 33% win percentage, Nathan. So he was winning a lot of football games for whoever he played with. Tell you what. So but your prayers were answered. Dennis Allen's gone, but y'all have an extensive search to go through. Bill Belichick's been mentioned. Ben Johnson, the Lions offensive coordinator, has been mentioned.
Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson would save this team.
There's not a lot that would, to be honest with you, considering y'all's cap situation and all that stuff. I mean, that's a whole other issue to go through with what the Saints got going on there.
That's very true.
All right, let's move on to college football, guys, and talk about Auburn. Gray, your prayers were answered this weekend. They lose to Vanderbilt 17-7, and Auburn now went out to make a bowl game that includes beating ULM, Texas A&M, and Alabama. And Vandy is actually bowl eligible now for the first time since 2018. So there's two sides of the coin there. Gray, Hugh Freeze, Auburn, find another way to lose a football game. You look at Keldrick Falk jumping over a defense or a blocker for a field goal. Gives Vandy a first down. Vandy scores, kind of puts the game out of reach. But then it looks like Auburn may have a chance, and Hugh Freeze's clock management. We're calling a timeout on a fourth down play with a 2-minute warning. It's 2:01. We call a timeout. Waste of a timeout. You have Towns McGue over 2 on field goals. He has looked terrible all season. 41% field goal percentage. I mean, this Auburn team every week impresses me on how they manage to lose a football game. It's like, They're the most creative when it comes to doing that. But what are your thoughts on what Auburn has done thus far, and including this game?
It's the same damn thing every week. Whenever we stupid show, we say the same. I'm saying the same damn thing. Auburn finding a way to lose a game. You outgained Vandy in this game by 100 yards. You outrushed them. You have more yards per play. You held Vandy to their worst offensive performance all season. And that's including games where Vandy lost to Georgia State this year, and definitely games where they had against some of the top teams in the country, like Texas and Alabama. And finding a way to lose when you've got, and it's the same thing. It's the same thing. All right. So every week I get up here and talk about how it's just, like I said, it's the same thing, finding a way to lose games, but how? why? And what can we see from this loss that maybe gives us a little bit of promise? Because there's not much you can take away from it that does. But it's the same thing in Auburn's other six losses this season. It's the freshmen out here making plays. Auburn started four freshmen on the defensive end and over seven freshmen on the defensive end played over 40 snaps in this game. Auburn had 64 defensive snaps. And then you got the freshmen on the offensive end and even the true sophomores I want to lump in there as well. I want to cut this team into upperclassmen and lowerclassmen. If this season was based on how the lowerclassmen, the freshmen, sophomores, redshirt freshmen, redshirt sophomores have played this season, Auburn's 8-1. It's not even close. The class of 2024 has played outstanding. Jake Crawford may be one of the best corners in the SEC right now as a true freshman. Kinsley Faustin played incredible. Caleb Harris played outstanding. DeMarcus Riddick, good to see Amaris Williams get some action as well. I know he's recovering from an injury earlier in the year, which everybody was so excited about him coming into the year. The Florida flip. Malik Blockton playing well. And then on offense, you got the freshmen playing well, Cam Coleman, Malcolm Simmons. When they're getting these opportunities, they are playing well. It's just these opportunities for Simmons and Coleman are being shattered. Cam Coleman had an easy 99-yard touchdown in this game. And Peyton Thorne underthrew it about 15 yards. To the point where a 6'4 Cam Coleman could not even come back and track the ball. He was wide open. He made a double move, went right by his guy. It's a 99-yard touchdown. If an average quarterback is that quarterback for Auburn. The upperclassmen are holding this team back. And no, I'm not talking about Jarquez Hunter. Jarquez Hunter is a major outlier in this. Oh, I'm going to discuss about how he only had 12 carries.
Yeah, where was Jarquez Hunter?
But the upperclassmen are holding this team back. You look at the top performers on this team, Keldrick Falk, Kayan Lee, Connor Liu, those true sophomores, the three flips that he got, and then the true freshmen that I've just been mentioning. And then you got the redshirt sophomores, guys like Jeremiah Cobb, who's been playing really well. It doesn't make sense. It does not make sense. Auburn is by far the best 3-9 team I've ever seen. And they're not going to lose to ULM, God forbid. They're going to finish 4-8. But there's no way that you have the type of production that you've gotten, especially from your underclassmen, and are going 4-8. Now, let me talk about Jarquez Hunter for a minute. Jarquez Hunter ran for 278 yards against Kentucky. It had almost 300 total yards on just over 25. I think he had 27 touches in Lexington a week ago and won, SEC Offensive Player of the Week. And it instantly went up to the SEC's top rusher. And I got on here last week and I was like, oh my gosh, maybe we finally realize we have the best running back in the SEC and we'll use him. I was wrong. Everybody was wrong. It doesn't make any sense. Jarquez Hunter got two carries in the third quarter. The third quarter where it was either tied 7-7 or it was 10-7. The best player on the field. He is by far the best player on the field. Touches the ball two times. And Hugh Freeze gave me that horrible excuse that he thought he looked gassed on the sideline. That is unexcusable. Unexcusable. There's no way we are just blowing that man's career away like that. He's the only upperclassman that is doing anything. I'll give it. Rivaldo Fairweather's playing really well. But you have the best running back in the SEC. And to be honest, it's not close. Dylan Sampson is a goal line merchant. Le'Veon Moss is out for the rest of the year. Texas A&M's got a good duo. Alabama's got a good duo. But there's not a running back as talented as Jarquez Hunter in the SEC. And he doesn't use him. He doesn't use him. And when he did use him, Vandy knew it. Vandy knew it. They knew Auburn was going to use him, especially towards the beginning of this game. They stacked the box. There was a couple times where I looked, and there were 9 Vanderbilt defenders in the box, and we ran it right at him. What kind of game plan is that? That's setting Quez up for failure. I don't even know what else to say. There's nothing for me to say. It's going to be the same thing against, you know, Auburn's got a bye week. I'm again going to call for the removal of number one at quarterback and put in somebody else. Don't care who. It could literally be Cam Coleman at quarterback. I do not care. I do not care. Get that dude out. No reason that guy should ever play football for Auburn again. He's not good. And Hugh Freeze's decision to stick with number one this offseason and not go out and try and get a top transfer quarterback like a Riley Leonard or Cam Ward or somebody like that, who you could have gotten. It's not like Auburn doesn't have the money to spend on somebody like that. You could have gotten one of those top transfer portal quarterbacks. It's coming back to bite him in the ass. And he's going to have to deal with the consequences of it. I honestly, the only thing moving forward that I even have on this Auburn team, it is wild, wild that Auburn still has the 5th ranked recruiting class in the country for 2025 and a top 5 recruiting class for 2026. What is he selling? What kind of burner phones does he have at Auburn right now?
Money.
Is that it?
It's why
he must have some deep Yellowwood must have some deep pockets. I tell you what, can I get some of that money, please? But yeah. Hugh Freeze is 1-6 in home games in the SEC home games, and it is the 5th time in 7 years as an SEC head coach that Hugh Freeze will not have a winning SEC record. And I know he's recruiting really well, but Auburn's a program where if you get a semi decent head coach that has experience recruiting in the South and not get Brian Harsin, they can recruit. There's the money. It's not a problem. So is Hugh Freeze part of the problem? I mean, does Auburn need to be looking elsewhere soon? I mean, they can't afford to pay 3 coaches, but if Hugh Freeze doesn't turn the ship around and we continue to see him make these poor decisions, not running Jarquez Hunter, still playing Peyton Thorne, not targeting his best players on the team, not targeting Cam Coleman a lot. We have yet to see Perry Thompson get a lot of playing time. Mm-hmm. I mean, at what point does the Auburn AD get rid of him? I mean, the Saints waited too long. Do you want to have a Saints situation?
No, not at all. We are the Saints situation. I think the Saints are actually in an Auburn situation to turn that around. But I don't think it's a this year thing. I think you have got to understand that Brian Harsin inherited an eight to nine win SEC football program from Gus Malzahn. 8 to 9 win a year. That's what Gus Malzahn would get you. Every once in a while, he would bust into the SEC championship for no reason. And he recruited, but struggled to recruit specific positions, specifically on the offensive line. But Auburn had a future first round pick at quarterback when Brian Harsin took over. A future starting running back in the NFL, a bunch of studs on the defensive end, guys like Derek Hall and Roger McCreary and all these guys. And Brian Harsin went 9-13 in 2 years and did not recruit. Brian Harsin literally said, recruits should come to me. That's not how it works in the South. That is how it worked at Boise State, because there's nobody else out in Boise, Idaho, besides Boise State. So recruits did come to him out there. That's not how it worked in Auburn, Alabama. Hugh Freeze is one of the best recruiters in the country. No question. there's no reason he should be able to recruit right now with the record that he has at the level that he is. But yes, you do have to see a proof of concept up there. But also, with the original point that I was trying to make is you also have to understand what he inherited. He inherited a 5-win SEC football team and a program that had been set back 4 or 5 years. I'm not saying you give Hugh Freeze 4 or 5 years. If we're still looking like this next year, it is time to talk about that, especially when he's got a different guy at the signal caller. But yeah, I can't sit here. Yes, I can blame Hugh Freeze for specific moments in the game. Yes, I can blame number one for specific moments in the game and throughout the season and blame specific players and coaches and mistakes. But I can't sit here and say we need to start looking elsewhere at the head coach. Who are you going to hire, first of all? Second of all,
James Franklin, by the way.
Hell no. Hey, I think that, hey.
Hell no.
I think Dennis Allen's available.
Nope. Never hiring a defensive head coach.
I'll just hire Mark Stoops. Mark Stoops is always on the table.
Never.
But Dion was in the
running. I'm sure you can get Billy Napier.
But again, it's not.
Dan Mullen?
It's not going to be. He'll never come to Auburn. He hates Auburn with so much passion. He was the one that started the whole Cam Newton thing. But we cannot put this whole season on Hugh Freeze. Yes, he's the head coach. Yes, you blame him for a game like this. You got to prepare your team to beat a team like Vanderbilt at home. You've got to score more than 7 points. There's an offensive head coach. But again, let him get these guys in. These freshmen are proving to be phenomenal. His recruits are proving to that they can come in and change this thing. And it just seems like all of the recruits, not even the freshmen that are on the team right now, but the recruits for the 2025 and 26 and 20, even the 2027 cycle are like, yeah, Hugh Freeze has that in the right direction, a direction that the previous administration at Auburn did not.
All right, let's talk.
Hold on. I'm going to get my 2 cents in here. I know we're talking about Hugh Freeze and what he inherited, but he now has that same record as Brian Harsin had in the SEC, 9-13. And I think what it really comes down to, you look at Hugh Freeze and some of these moments he's had in game, good coaches will be able to make adjustments to ensure their team will get the win. And that hasn't been there this season. And I think it's a concept of him continuously making the wrong decision.
Yeah.
Putting Peyton Thorne at quarterback is one of the bigger mistakes he has made. Not running Jarquez Hunter. I think that was one of the more obvious ones. The clock management issue. I mean, you got to be aware as a head coach, if you want to win this league, people will take advantage of that so many different times. I broke this down at the beginning of the season when we talked about Brian Kelly. But there's 3 parts to actually coaching. There's recruiting, there's development, and there's actual on-field coaching. And if you want to have a successful team, the coach has to be able to do all 3. Hugh Freeze, great recruiter. I know he can recruit really good. He has proven in the past that he can coach on the field good. I know times have changed a little bit, roles have changed, so he's got to get with that. He's got to update his coaching philosophy just a little bit. And then development. Can he still develop people into these top level players? Yeah. Of course, that's going to take time. But one thing he can take advantage of right now is improving his on-field coaching. That's how you win games. That's how you continuously improve the program. Because when a recruit sees Auburn going 4-8 in the season and say, they'll ask themselves, do I really want to come to a program that has continuously gone 4-8 and we continuously see them make the same mistakes over and over and over again? No. I tell you, one of the biggest losers of this season, Cam Coleman. He used a year of eligibility when, honestly, he probably should have redshirted. Peyton Thorne ruined his first season at Auburn. I will say there are many other freshmen on the scene that were affected. I really loved the defensive effort on Saturday. But when the offense can't move the ball at all, I mean, it comes down to certain things like that. Just the play calling was not there. Peyton Thorne I don't understand. He has very little ability to throw the ball and make plays. Love to run read option. Y'all ran read option at the 1 yard line. He almost got a safety because he wanted to pull the ball down because he thinks he's Lamar Jackson. I don't understand what he was doing there. And then of course the play to follow up where he can't throw the ball more than 20 yards on the field, looking like Drew Brees about to retire. So as far as the future of Auburn goes, Hugh Freeze has to show major improvement in actually coaching during the game. But in other parts, it's just going to take time. So I encourage Auburn fans to keep having that patience, but don't have this expectation that Hugh Freeze is able to get away with some of this other stuff because he has to be held accountable. This is his team. And if he wants to continuously improve, he has to make those type of changes.
Well said.
That was perfectly said. I agree with everything Nathan said right there, but let's move on to the other games that happened this weekend. The big one being number 3 Penn State losing to number 4 Ohio State, 20-13. James Franklin is now 1-10 against Ohio State and 1-13 against AP top 5 teams. So he has been an AP top 5 team outside of really Ohio State. So, and you look at the offense performance this game, Drew Aller, terrible. The leading rusher for Penn State was their tight end, Tyler Warren. 3 carries for 47 yards. Their leading receiver? Their running back, Nicholas Singleton, 6 receptions, 54 yards. A little bit backwards. You have 2 of the most talented running backs in the country, Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton, and you managed to not score an offensive touchdown this game against Ohio State, whose defenses look very suspect at times. At what point does Penn State get rid of James Franklin? Because Penn State's not a program that has a ceiling of New York Six Bowl like at Ole Miss. Penn State has won national championships. So at what point does Penn State say, we can go elsewhere and get an improvement over here? We can go get the Indiana head coach and do better. I mean, at what point do they just get rid of him?
I expect sooner than later because it's the exact opposite of the Hugh Freeze situation. James Franklin's been there for years and years and years and years. And this is his team and he's got talent. It's not like he can't recruit. It's not like he can't develop. We've seen him develop players. It's winning the big games. It's finally getting over the hump in the Big Ten. It's just Penn State hasn't been able to do that under James Franklin. And we've seen them do it in the past. Just like you mentioned, Alex, this is not a team that can't win national championships like an Ole Miss cannot or like a Texas A&M cannot. So I do expect them to look sooner than later because I do, just like you said, there's a for sure hire out there right now for Penn State. It's the Indiana coach. I really don't know how to say his name, but
Cignetti.
Yeah, sure. And he's phenomenal and he would fit so perfectly at Penn State. And James Franklin's going to find another coaching job for sure. He's got experience. He's a good recruiter. He'll find another head coaching job, but I do think Penn State needs to start thinking about elsewhere sooner rather than later, because the more and more they stick between number 3 and number 6 in the Big Ten, which is where they have been like forever, the worse it's going to be for them.
Gosh, I think we already talked about this in the offseason, but Penn State is the Ole Miss of the Big Ten. At this point in time, and which they shouldn't be given their historic past. I look at James Franklin as a head coach. He takes care of business against the teams he should, but when he gets into these top 5 matches, when he goes against Ohio States and Michigan's of the world, it's like something just breaks down. The structure of his team, the play calling, you don't see the type of success he's had against these other smaller opponents. In this game, I thought Penn State was in a terrific spot to really win. You talked about the pit six early on, Will Howard threw. There were multiple times where Penn State just didn't accomplish their job. They were in the red zone. I mean, Drew Aller throwing pick in the end zone. I really didn't think it was his fault. The receiver should have held on to the ball. But moments like that decide games like this. If you want to be a great team, if you want to go to the playoff, if you want to be able to do some of these things that Ohio State does and Michigan does and these top teams of the Big 12, Big 10 do, you have to win this type of games. And it is time and time again that James Franklin comes up short. It's not all on him, but when you're the head coach, you got to take responsibility for your team falling short. And every single year I look at James Franklin and the type of roster he has, he's had the ability to beat these teams. It's not been the lack of talent. I think the talent level is pretty much right there with it. I don't think the play calling is bad. You don't do what you're supposed to do. You don't do your job. The adjustments that Ryan Day is able to make mid-game, that Jim Harbaugh in the past was able to make mid-game, they outcoached James Franklin. And in this game, it's pretty much the exact same thing. So at some point, James Franklin will have to go. And I think the biggest thing holding him back is the fact that he continuously does a pretty good job. He gets them to a New York Six Bowl. And that's not a given thing in this in college football. But if you want to be a top level program, if you want to keep contending for national championships, at some point a decision will have to be made to replace James Franklin as a head coach. Not saying that he's bad, because I think he's a terrific head coach. I loved what he did with Vanderbilt earlier on in his career. And I think that they made the right hire when they brought him to Penn State at the time. But he hasn't taken care of his business. He hasn't done his job like he is supposed to. And you can't continuously expect to be the head coach at Penn State if you're not going to be able to win these big games. That's what it's going to come down to. Penn State will continuously have a good recruiting class. They'll be able to take advantage of that. I don't think that's ever going to change. It's the coaching staff that has to change. It's not on the players anymore. James Franklin, this was really his last shot, in my opinion, given the type of year it was. Ohio State, even given the type of talent they've had, they've looked really, really bad, especially in the offensive end. Will Howard's not really been a great quarterback for them. And they took advantage of that some in this game, but they didn't have a full game. It's like they only played 15 minutes here. Let's say another 10 minutes here. And if you want to win a game like that, you got to play the whole 60 minutes and you pretty much got to dominate it. I think another thing too, I think Penn State having to play this game at noon was the stupidest thing ever. If we're talking about a whiteout at night, I think it's a different result. So Fox with their big noon kickoff has absolutely ruined games like this. But you can't blame it on that. At the end of the day, I think that's just like an outlier in the whole conversation of the variables that go into Penn State losing games like this. But again, it just goes back to the point that James Franklin has had multiple opportunities to win games like this and he hasn't gotten it done.
Let's talk about two SEC games that happened. South Carolina beating number 10 Texas A&M 44-20. Game was really never close. The Gamecocks storming the field, crazy sight, got caught in some of the hedges, kind of like Auburn did a couple of years ago. And you had Georgia, number 2 Georgia, struggling to beat Florida with a third string quarterback that was a walk on and couldn't even start at Yale. And they only beat them 34-20. And that game was really, really close late into the third quarter. So, guys, talk about Texas A&M. They lose Le'Veon Moss, like Gray mentioned earlier, probably their best player offensively. Is this team without him still good enough to make the playoffs?
Yeah, I think they are, but somebody's going to have to step up, especially in the passing game. It's not about are they talented enough, but that Texas game is going to be huge. They win that Texas game, maybe end up in Atlanta. I don't really know who's going to end up in Atlanta anymore.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's the like 8-way tie that could happen is crazy. The
projected ESPN FPI currently was like 6 teams tied at 6-2 in the conference. and then of course Texas at 1. I believe Alabama held the tiebreaker given the win over Georgia, and then it predicted win over LSU. So if we're talking about this year in college football, did anyone really expect this to happen? I mean, we went through our SEC predictions earlier on, and I said something similar to the fact that it's going to be chaos and you can't really predict that it's going to happen, but I didn't think to this level it would happen this way.
So the question of them being talented enough to get to the playoff, they are, and they can, but it's going to be about things that are going to need to slide their way, in my opinion, and they've got to beat Texas at home on Rivalry Week.
talking about Georgia, Carson Beck, terrible performance once again, throws three interceptions and has 11 interceptions in his past five games. I mean, outside of dating that TikTok girl, what's wrong with this guy? At the first part of the season, we were thinking this guy, people were saying he's the number one quarterback in this draft class.
I don't know who. It wasn't me.
Mel Kiper. Yeah. I mean, Carson Beck going to the Panthers. That's what some of the mock drafts said. But yeah. I mean, what's wrong with this guy? Because he has all the talent in the world. He has all these players around him. One of, if not the best offensive lines in the country, a pretty good defense. I mean, what's wrong with this guy? Because if he can't play football, Georgia can't win football games. The running game's not good.
Georgia Panthers, there's a reason that a seventh year walk-on was starting over Carson Beck early in his career. I know Beck is not like a, he's not a quarterback that can't make any throw. He can, but his decision-making is wild. All three of his interceptions were just plain decision, just plain pathetic decision-making in the pocket. And his pocket presence is atrocious. He's not an NFL quarterback. The fact that people even had him as an NFL quarterback early in the year was bananas to me. But about this game, though, if DJ Lagway doesn't get hurt, I think Florida walks away with a win. It wasn't close at the beginning, and once Lagway went down, it was like Florida's option running game was completely taken out of the table and had to rely on this third stringer walk on from Yale. And it's just like, you're not going to beat Georgia doing that, but it wasn't Carson Beck through the air that was winning them these games. It was these jet sweeps to Dylan Bell. It was the running game, even though ETN got hurt. Georgia's just one of, if not the deepest team in the country. So if your best option on offense, if you're Florida, is taken away, it's hard. It's going to be hard to win the game. But I will stand on that flag of if Lagway stays in this game, Florida walks away with at least a 2-score win.
You know, I'm glad we're talking about this today. This has been on my mind a lot recently, especially after the game ended Saturday. Kirby Smart runs a pre-2017 Alabama offense.
Yes.
He has a game manager at quarterback and surrounds him with a bunch of talent and expects him to make the small plays. Ohio State does something similar, not to the level of what Georgia does now. But it is crazy that in this day and age, Georgia has not had one of these Bryce Youngs of the world or just pure improvisers that go and make plays. At some point, I think they'll have to adjust. You look at what Miami has done with Cam Ward at quarterback, however much I hate him, but he makes his plays. You can keep looking around the country. Jalen Milroe at times was able to be that guy. So it just situations like that, if you want to have success, I think you're going to have to rely more on your quarterback, and you can't just expect him to be the game manager. But Carson Beck, as far as decision-making goes, one of the worst decision makers I've ever seen. You go back to the Alabama game, the picks he threw in that, awful. Sure. Throwing it right to people. Sure. And he should have had way more in that game. You can continuously break down film and try to figure out what he's looking at, how he's reading the defense. And I think the biggest thing is forcing it to people. I mean, the number of times that he'll just force throws in there that aren't open, and he'll pay for them. It changes. It eventually will change an outcome of the game. Georgia is able to make up a lot of his mistakes just because of how talented they are. And I think that goes back to their offensive line and their running game, what they've been able to establish throughout the season, even without ETN being fully healthy. But then you look at their defense and how much they're able to stop teams from scoring points off turnovers. I think that's another big thing you have to realize. So Georgia as a team, I don't think they're as complete as people think they are. You can talk about depth. They have the depth there. But if they want to eventually win a national championship again, something has to be done at quarterback. Carson Beck has got to figure something out. He cannot keep having games like this and expect to win. You get into the playoff, you're going to play really, really good teams that will take advantage of your mistakes. one turnover in a game is enough to sway the outcome. I mean, I think that is one of the biggest things you can look at. When you turn over the ball, when you change, you lose possessions right there. That is the biggest thing. It is wild that we are this far through the season and we're still having this talk about Carson Beck and the decision-making he's had, because earlier on, it was the same thing. And nothing has been done to really improve that thought process of making reads. And I mean, yeah, you're right, Gray. At times, he has the ability to make these huge plays with Georgia, but when it comes down to is him really giving the game away, and then you're playing from behind and you're scrambling to make up points. They're able to do in this game. Will they be able to do it in the next one they have? That's the biggest thing.
Carson Beck's bad, but it doesn't help that his offensive coordinator is Mike Bobo. It doesn't help at all. Gray knows all about Mike Bobo.
Amen.
He can make a good quarterback look really bad. He did it at Auburn.
I just did that with Bo Nix. Yep.
Well, that's all time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, students of the game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.